Live from Torquay, this is Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye on 94.7 The Pulse.
And it's a great pleasure to welcome to the program Bill Mithen, who is the chair of the G21 board, stepping in for Elaine Carbines. Bill, thanks for being part of the program this morning.
Oh, pleasure, Mitchell. Nice to be here.
And your inaugural appearance on this program as well, which is obviously something special.
It is, yes.
So I thought, just because you're here as the chair of the board as opposed to the CEO, that maybe you could just run us through that sort of governance structure of G21 and also what the organisation means to you in your eyes.
Absolutely. I think it's a really strong governance structure that G21 has, which is terrific and representative of the type of organisation it is. So the board consists of 15 members. Five of those members are appointed CEOs of the five local government areas that are a part of the regional alliance, and then five of those are also local councillors, and often the mayor from the local councils, but not always the mayor. So the councils make a decision about who they would like to appoint to the G21 board. And then the other five are independent directors. So they are elected from the membership of G21. So we have near enough to 200 members of the organisation. And, if required, there's an election. If there are more nominations and vacancies, we have an election in five independent directors. So I'm one of those independent directors, and was really lucky and very fortunate, and I've considered myself very privileged to have been elected chair a little over 12 months ago now. So it's a really, I think the board plays a really significant role in the governance. It enables really good discussion, and it brings a forum where the five councils and the five regions, if you like, within the region, are able to come together and discuss issues and often have really nuanced conversations that you can't necessarily have on a one-to-one basis. You need more people in the room. So it provides a really great forum for, I think, what have been some fantastic outcomes for the region.
Yeah, and I know that Elaine has spoken before about how other regions are looking at what we're doing and maybe trying to emulate it, because you get that power of the five councils coming together, and that's obviously adding a lot of weight to trying to lobby different levels of government for change in the area.
That's absolutely right. I think the reputation of G21 is really strong within state and federal politics, and I think it's been widely recognised as an incredibly strong regional collaboration. I think one of the important features of it is the independence. So it's an independent company. It's a company limited by guarantee, and all of those 15 directors, while some are appointed because of their position, they have duties and obligations, and they act on behalf of that company, and that company maintains its independence, which allows it to advocate really strongly to all levels of government, to all colours of government, for things that are really important to the region. So I think that's a really unique aspect.
And one of the highlights is obviously the stakeholder forum that's been running for a few years now, and that's just down the road from here at the RACV Torquay Resort. And I think what that's done is sort of brought these key people to the region, like the Premier, different members of the cabinet, and sort of led the conversation, and it's brought people together, which is always important.
I think absolutely. I think the people who come along to that forum really enjoy the calibre of speakers that we've been able to bring along in the last few years. This year will be no different. We've got some fantastic people lined up to come along as well. So it always sells out. I think it's been going for about 4 or 5 years now, and the first year it was held down on the waterfront, and it expanded and expanded. And I think that last year we had a sort of record crowd of up over 250 people. So well worth coming to, I think.
Absolutely. So talking about some of the topics for discussion, and one of them is the city deal bid. And this has been in the newspaper this morning. I was reading about it with Sarah Henderson saying that she's striving to secure funding for different areas. What's interesting to me is obviously this age-old problem, which is that we've got obviously a limited pot of money, but we have to try and work out what projects we want to fund, whether it's the Great Ocean Road or Simmons Stadium, or whether it's the Convention Centre. So how are we sort of working through those issues?
Look, I think we're working through them really well, and I think a city deal represents a great opportunity for the city and the region. There are not many of these deals already struck. In fact, there are only three currently, and there are none in Victoria. So I think the first thing that has to happen is that the federal and state governments need to agree on the place that a Victorian city deal will take place. So Bendigo and Ballarat are also putting in strong bids, and you know we need to make sure that Geelong and the region are the first cab off the rank for Victoria, and next cab off the rank for a city deal nationally. So that agreement is really important. Within then a deal, I think what we're able to do, and we're going to be able to do, is negotiate and structure a range of projects for funding. And that will be a really important thing for the region. The focus at the moment, and there's been pretty strong consensus around a focus centred around the visitor economy. And I think strategically that makes a lot of sense. I think we've got an economy that we all know is transitioning from manufacturing, old-style manufacturing to a service economy, and that tourism and the visitor economy is going to be an important driver of that. So to structure something that has that strategic flow through it is really, I really think, is a very smart thing to do, and I think we'll get both the federal and state governments interested in that, and already they've declared their hand as being very interested in having that strategy running through a city deal. So the biggest, asset in that space is the Great Ocean Road. So I think including the Great Ocean Road and some of the infrastructure projects for the Great Ocean Road will be a really important part. Having said that, quite rightfully, we should be also looking at some very Geelong-centric projects as well. So I think you mentioned a couple. The Simmons Stadium Stage 5 is certainly one that's been talked about. Of course, the Convention Centre is certainly one that's also been talked about. The Geelong Waterfront Safe Harbour is another one. So there are a range of very central Geelong projects that should and rightfully be a part of and be the centrepiece of such a deal. But then I think, you know, strategically aligning those projects with the visitor economy, that where visitors are coming to our region, coming to our city, and then flowing down the coast to places like where we are now, and including some of those important tourist attractions, is a really important thing. So I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah. So it's just a question, I suppose, as to how big this pot of money is going to be, and that will depend on the deal that's struck as to how many of these different projects we can get up. Because I've always read through your list of priority projects with great interest to see, you know, what we're trying to focus on, and there's so many different things that need doing around the region to try and make this place a better place, and sometimes it's kind of like, well, where do you start?
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that's why we go through a process of trying to determine the priorities in the first place, and not just have a huge, you know, shopping list of things that could be done. So we've got, you know, a list of priority projects, and then within those priority projects, specific items that we think are really important to be funded, and key projects that should be funded. So you're right, I mean, you know, some money's never enough, and of course we'd always like more, and we know that we'll be negotiating and with the federal and state governments, and of course the local government as well, who are important parts of a city, any sort of city deal. There'll be strong negotiation to get as much funding as possible so that we're able to fund as many projects as possible.
And consensus, you spoke about that, and that's what your media release also touches on between the different organisations. And I think Sarah Henderson, as the member for Corangamite, set up a sort of meeting between all of the key lobbying organisations. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So the federal government have been quite rightly leading this process through Sarah Henderson, and Sarah's called a couple of meetings now, where she's got all the important and key stakeholders around the table, and that's been really important. You know, it's a federal government policy and it's a federal government initiative, so, you know, quite rightly they should lead that process and be the mediator in that process. They've done that. Importantly, we know that nothing will happen unless the federal and state governments agree, and so there's been certainly some discussion, and I'm aware that the Premier has written to the Prime Minister regarding what a focus for a city deal in our region would look like. And, you know, he's certainly, within that letter, he talked about the Geelong and the Great Ocean Road. So I think there's a pretty reasonable consensus around what it should focus on. That being said, I think also, you know, we're also in consensus that there should be some Geelong projects that are really very much a part of the deal. And if you like, projects that anchor the deal, and, you know, so those really major projects, you know, something like the Convention Centre, without, you know, preempting anything, but something like the Convention Centre really anchoring a city deal, I think, is really important.
So on the state budget, we've had a bit of time for the dust to settle around this, and time for some more analysis to be done. How would you summarise the G21's overall position in reacting to the state budget?
Oh, look, I think like most state budgets and budgets, you know, good and bad. There were certainly some good news for the region, but equally some things that we were disappointed in. We were, of course, I know Elaine has been very strong on this. We were disappointed that the secondary schools digital hub didn't get funded within the budget. We're hopeful because there is a line item in the budget, about $84 million, that talks about upgrading of digital technology in state classrooms. So we're hopeful that project can still be funded within that money. There's still some more detail about what that $84 million will fund. But we think, you know, it's not a huge amount of money. It's $4.7 million for the digital hub. It'll give world-class access and internet speed to all of our secondary schools in the region, right across the region. And, you know, I think that's really important. I mean, today's the way, you know, I sit here down in Torquay watching you only use your mobile phone for notes and yes, contacts and everything. And so, you know, that's the way the world works today. And for our students, you know, we have a lower than state average in terms of completion rates of year 12. So we need our students to have the very best services and the very best facilities. And that's what this is. And for a relatively modest amount of $4.7 million, it was also pushed by the Barwon Region Partnership as a key priority as well. So we're really hopeful that within that $84 million, we might be able to fund that. But having said that, you know, there were some other things in the budget that were really good. There's $15 million for the Central Geelong revitalisation. So that's a really important project, a really important part of Central Geelong and the city of Geelong. So great to see some funding for that. Funding for the establishment of a task force for the management of the Great Ocean Road, which is something that G21 has certainly advocated for, and the members of G21, particularly the local government members, have really advocated for, and to try and bring that together, as well as, you know, some important funding for rail line upgrades, so the South Geelong to Warren Ponds duplication, as well as some funds for planning for a rail line down to this neck of the woods, down the Surf Coast, which I think we all would recognise as really important. So, you know, I would say a mixed bag in many respects from the state budget.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I mean, in terms of a railway line down to here, it's probably quite a fair way off into the future. I mean, we don't even have rail connecting Geelong and Ballarat anymore, for example.
Yeah, I think that's right. But, you know, it all starts with planning. And yeah, I think, as you see, often is the case with these major infrastructure projects, you know, you need money to do really good, solid, strong planning to start with, and, you know, make sure that the land's available, make sure the planning's done, so that when eventually all of that is complete and you've got a really good, well-structured project, you can advocate and lobby for the funding to actually get it done. So, look, I'm sure it's not going to happen tomorrow. I don't think we're all going to be catching a train to Torquay tomorrow, as much as probably quite a few people would like to.
Absolutely.
But I think that, you know, certainly what this indicates is that state government see it as important and see that it will happen in the future. So that's, I think, a really important step forward.
Now, moving on to the GROW report card event, run us through that and maybe just tell the listeners what GROW is for those that aren't familiar with this program.
Absolutely. So GROW, I can wear two hats here as the CEO of Give Where You Live Foundation, because yes, we of course have been sort of operationalising the project. So this is a project, GROW's an acronym, and it stands for the G21 Region Opportunities for Work Project or Initiative, and it was really started to address place-based entrenched disadvantage. So we know that in our region there are some areas that are really suffering from the effects of disadvantage, and it's really entrenched and hard to move, been there for decades. So both organisations, G21 and Give Where You Live Foundation, came together to develop this project, which is a fantastic project. So, and great collaboration and partnership. We've been now going for, we released our strategic plan 2 years ago, and then we've done our first 12 months report card. And the report card, the project really looks at a couple of ways of going about addressing that entrenched disadvantage. The first thing to note is that it's all about working through employment. So the evidence says that one of the best, certainly not the only way, and certainly not always the place to start, but for us the place to start was through employment. So the giving people a long-term sustainable job, not a part-time job or a casual job, but a long-term sustainable job, was a really big step forward in helping them out of disadvantage. So through the project, we aim to create job opportunities in places that are disadvantaged places or identified as that, through social procurement, which is thinking about your purchases of goods and services in the region and working out whether you can purchase them more locally and then, in fact, using a supplier that is prepared to offer job opportunities for people who are living in these areas. So we've had a big focus on procurement. We did a study which showed that there was $17 billion worth of goods and services procured in the region each and every year, and of that $17 billion, $9 billion was purchased from non-local suppliers, $8 billion from local suppliers. So from that, we decided that if we shifted 7% the procurement activity, just 7%, that would equal $1 billion worth of economic activity in the region, in the economy, 2,500 jobs, and we would aim to have 500 of those jobs in disadvantaged places. Mm-hmm. So that was our target. We reported just about a month ago on our first 12 months, and of the data that we collected, so we've got 60 compact signatories who provide us data. However, in this instance, we're only able to get data from 18 of that 60. But we were able to show that nearly $25 million, it's actually $23.88 million, was changed from non-local procurement to local procurement. Our economic modelling shows that would equate to about 145 jobs, both indirect and direct jobs. And then we can also point to 70 direct employment outcomes for people who are connected with Grow, for organisations that are signed up to Grow, compact signatories, and they've gone and employed someone because of that compact signatory. So it was fantastic results in the first instance.
And where's the future? I suppose, where are we going from here? It sounds like things are moving along and progress is being made. So where do you anticipate being, at the five-year stage, if you said we got started 2 years ago?
Yeah, look, we hope that so we've given ourselves 10 years, and we hope that over 10 years, somewhere between 2,500 and 5,000 jobs will be created in not just in the region, but in those disadvantaged areas, which would make a significant impact. Our goal is to continue to try and shift that 7%, so that would be $1 billion in local activity. Which $1 billion sounds like 7% doesn't sound like much. $1 billion sounds like a lot.
Of course.
We've already shown that in that first 12 months, the shift actually was 9%. So we can actually do it. But we certainly need some of the larger organisations to really get on board, but they are, and they're very supportive. So, we aim through Grow to make a difference to some really important key metrics for those disadvantaged places. So the CIFA index, which is the socioeconomic index for areas, which is a measure of relative disadvantage. Mm. So we've got some areas that are really low on that. So we would hope that we see those figures start to shift. The important thing to note on that is that those figures, those metrics, they're one figure, but they're really complex. They're developed really in a complex way. So there's lots of contributing factors. And while Grow is a part of it, it's not the only part of it. And Grow certainly works through a collective impact model to make sure that all the other services that are required continue.
Yeah, I think that's right. And what you were saying is spot on, that obviously employment is helpful and it's a big part, but it may not necessarily be the whole story behind those figures. And I do remember your presentation at the Stakeholder Forum last year, where you spoke about just some of the selected postcodes and like levels of unemployment in certain demographics, like youth unemployment, for example. And while the overall unemployment state across the entire region might be quite positive and below the average, in these sort of targeted areas, there are some big problems which this is obviously trying to address.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes you've got to look through the data. So the recent unemployment figures have come out, and we've just ticked below 6% regionally for unemployment. Fantastic result, below state average, which is terrific given the transitioning nature of our economy. However, if you look at certain suburbs, and there's certainly one suburb, unemployment there is 16%, and we've got that data. So that's at a SA2 level, or statistical area 2 level, at a sort of postcode level. So 16%. So, three times really, or close to three times what the state average and the regional average is. But then if you go to an SA1 level, which is essentially 200 households, give or take, And there are some areas that it goes up to as high as 40%, 40. So, you've got to look through that data a little bit and not simply just accept, oh, look, we're doing a good job. Unemployment's ticked below 6%. We can all get on with our jobs and, you know, we're all pat ourselves on the back. There are still some people who are living in really incredibly vulnerable circumstances and dealing with challenges that I don't think any of us would particularly like to deal with. And they do it on a daily basis. And I think as a region, you know, that's something that we need to really take care of and think about. And thankfully, I think the region is, which is good.
Before I let you go, maybe just tell us a bit about Give Where You Live, given that you are involved with that, of course, leading it up.
I am, yes. So Give Where You Live Foundation's been around for over 60 years. So we started as the Geelong and District Community Chest, and then we became United Way, and then now, of course, Give Where You Live Foundation. So we do a range of things. Our mission is to address disadvantage. We do a range of things from a programmatic point of view. So we're obviously very heavily involved in Grow, and we've made a financial commitment, a funding commitment to Grow of $2 million over 10 years, as well as then an operational commitment of making sure that we operationalise that project. The other thing that we do, which we're very well known for, is our grant making. So our grant making forms an important part of our purpose of addressing disadvantage. So this year, We'll give grants. We're actually in the process of reading all the grant applications. We've been asked for $4.8 million. We don't have 4.8. We've probably got more like $1.8 million to give out. But grants this year will go out around that $1.8 million mark to other community organisations who are working really hard in a range of different areas to address disadvantage. So we do a lot of work in emergency food as well, emergency food relief. We've got a strategy and an appeal called Feed Geelong, which the appeal is in October. And, we do some work there as well, some really big work in emergency food. So we're every day of the week, I suppose, out there doing some fundraising. So if anyone wants to donate, they can go to our website. But of course, not only fundraising, but more importantly, we're trying to make sure that we have as big an impact on our mission as possible, and that is to address disadvantage.
Very good. Well, Bill, thank you very much for being part of the program. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure you've done Elaine proud by filling in and
speaking about
these very important issues. So thank you very much, and we'll hopefully catch up again soon.
Thanks, Mitchell. It's been great to be here.
Bill Mithen there, the chair of the G21 board. It's 5 minutes to 10. We'll go to a break and more to come in a moment.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.